What's up, fellas? Welcome back to Convos Over Cold Brew with me, your host, Emma Abrahamson. Today, I'm so excited to have Josh Kerr on the podcast. He is the 1500 meter world champion. He just won in Budapest. He also just won the Fifth Ave Mile. He's a British distance runner. He currently runs for the Brooks Beasts. He and David Bribich actually hosted a podcast called Sit and Kick, so maybe you guys are familiar with that. I don't know how active they are on it anymore because now David's a part of Union Track Club, but anyways, he's a great podcaster, and this episode was fantastic, so I hope you guys enjoy it. Okay, Josh, I'm excited to have you on the podcast. You already said this is your third podcast of the day, so hopefully you still have some more to talk about. But you have been a highly requested guest, so I had to get you on.
That's awesome. You know, I'm very excited to be here. And I'm trying to take my time off and try and get some golf in. So I was like, I'm going to get all my media stuff done today. And that means I can really enjoy and not have to worry about being slightly drunk on podcasts. So I am sober as a priest right now.
It's good. I'm glad to hear it. Have you done like the Beer Mile podcast? Because people drink on that one.
Oh, really? No, yeah. I haven't done that podcast. I think I've had a couple of conversations with some of those guys before. They seem nice guys, but no, I've never been on there. But I don't know if that's me. I've did a we did like a live gaming thing, like me, Henry Wynn, David Ribich, like, and we were drinking on that, and I was just making a fool of myself. So I was like, I should probably not. Should probably not do that again. So it's always good to come in sober.
Yeah, that's good. I'm sure my listeners appreciate it too, even though it would be funny, but
maybe one day. We'll see.
Yeah, maybe one day. Well, to start off, if people don't know who you are, do you want to just give us like a little bit of a rundown of who you are, what you're about?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm Josh Kerr. I'm a British 1500 meter runner. I'm the current world 1500 meter champion. I run for the Brooks Beasts and have done for the last 5 years. And yeah, I'm now currently in my off season, just living it up doing the podcast routes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what you prefer, racing or doing podcasts.
You know, I obviously, you know, podcasts, you know, I get to talk about myself, and as runners, we're big divas. So I'm not complaining about it. So I'm enjoying it.
Good. Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like you've been a really consistent runner over the last 5 years, but I feel like this year you really went on a tear. So you just won again in New York. How was that experience?
It was great. And, you know, I really wanted to have some redemption on last year. I didn't think I ran very well last year, and it wasn't the result I wanted. And yeah, it was a tough decision to actually do it, because I'd committed to doing these races before World Champs, and I really wanted to try and extend my season as much as I could. But yeah, obviously after Worlds, I was still very, very focused in trying to run the British record in Zurich. And then there was a couple of pacing mishaps there, and that kind of fell a little bit away from the time I wanted to run, but that's okay. And then it was like, oh, do we really want to extend a little bit longer? But Fifth Ave is so fun, and it's always a great way to end your season. And, you know, Brooks are coming out with this Hyperion Elite 4 shoe that I was like, I would love to race in that. And I did a couple of workouts in it, and I was like, yeah, I really want to do this. So it was an easy conversation after that. But, you know, it's difficult for athletes to peak for something. And then, you know, it's like, you know, doing the NBA finals and then going and playing, you know, league games again afterwards. So it is a weird transition, but that's the sport we live in. And I've been trying to soak up for a couple of weeks now of everything that I've attempted to achieve for a long time, and being able to do that is a weird experience, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. I guess, how do you like keep yourself motivated after winning Worlds? I feel like it would be so hard to be like, okay, time to go run a Diamond League, you know? I feel like, I don't know, it's like the biggest stage ever. So then to go, yeah, I guess, I mean, Diamond League isn't really a league meet necessarily, yeah. But it's still like, it's just like a normal, I don't know, European race. So I guess, how do you kind of like check yourself back into that mentality of getting after it after you already accomplished like the main goal of the season probably?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because it is difficult. But I think what's actually the most difficult is zoning out of the, like, how locked in you've been for so long. And so I have a really tough time like of post race like parties, I guess. Like, so celebrating Worlds was really difficult for me because I hadn't had anything bad. Like, I hadn't, you know, eaten out in 5 weeks. I hadn't had anything but like water, or like sparkling water for like 5-6 weeks. And it was just like, oh, you transition from like being this locked into then, you know, drinking champagne with everyone, with Brooks and family members and stuff. And I have a really tough time doing that. And so it was almost easier to slowly transition out of it and keep racing, because I had some more goals in mind. And I think the motivating thing is the mountain is so tall and it's such a difficult climb that when you're at the top, it's nice to knock out a couple goals, you know? So like, I really wanted to run a PB and run 3:28.8, and I wasn't able to do that, but I was like, I know how difficult it is to get to the position I am now in the fitness I'm in. Let's just take advantage of that as long as we can before we kind of hang it up for the season. And so that's kind of one of the motivating factors is, hey, you're not guaranteed tomorrow. Just make sure that you take advantage of the fitness that you've gained, and it's taken so long to get here. So let's take advantage as much as we can, but also enjoy the experience as much as you can as well.
Yeah, I was like stalking your Instagram and stuff. And then people were like, also, like, because I asked people for listener questions, and people were talking about that you've been like very meticulous this year, and like that you've been very detail oriented. Can you talk about, like you said, like the last 5 weeks or so, like what you did leading up to Worlds that's different than like your normal training program?
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, we did a couple of Diamond Leagues this year before British Champs. So I ran Oslo and Lausanne, Oslo and Lausanne. And they went well, but they didn't go like amazing. And we were still, I think it was like 60 something days. So we had like 2 months after Oslo. And, you know, everyone was running 3:29 and running, you know, American records, Aussie records, you know, all these different records. And I was like, damn, like this is the wildest, like, the year of 1500 meter running I've ever been in. Like, I ran 3:30.0 something and got ninth and got zero Diamond League points. And I was like, what are we doing? And so I texted Danny. I said, listen, we need like 2.5 seconds in 2.5 months. Like, can we do it? And he's like, yeah, don't worry about it. I've got a plan, kind of thing. And training was going to be ranked, like, you know, really, really building up towards Worlds, like it always is. And, you know, we do that. And then, you know, I ran well at Lausanne on 3:29. And then it was like, damn, like I'm close, but I'm still not there. Like, but, you know, again, we have a plan in mind. Run British Champs. I kind of got a pre-selection for British Champs. And so I was able to run the 8 there. And I went back. And when I was traveling back, I was speaking to my missus, and she was like, you know, I kind of asked her, I was like, what can I do better? Like, I'm not trying to call anyone out on anything or anything like that. But, you know, the sad reality of our sport is there are people that are not doing it within the rules. And so it's like, where can I gain like my 1% back? You know, mentally, I feel like I'm really pushing it to, you know, to be as locked in as I can and be able to deal with like high stress environments. But like, what else can I do better? And she's like, I think you can really work on your nutrition. And so I was like, okay. And we have a full-time nutritionist with the Brooks Beast. And so I gave him a call and I said, listen, what do you think about maybe just writing me a full menu? And like for this 5-week camp, we're just going to lock everything in so we can make the body super resilient. We don't need to worry about kind of off injuries or illness because of our body's not fueled properly. So why don't we try and do that? And I'll bring a chef in and I'll get them to do, you know, to cook all the meals and shop for me and stuff like that. And he was like, yeah, let's do it. And so we did that. And I was able to just be just super purposeful with everything that I was doing. And it meant that I just had really left it all out there, which, you know, I later figure out that my fiance was more nervous she's ever been while I was standing on the start line of World Championships, because it was one of those situations of he's done everything he could to be in this position. And if he doesn't win now, I don't think he ever will. And that was a way of looking at it as a spectator, but as an athlete, it was almost very calming of like, I'd come to terms with the results that were going to be coming my way. And I was very relaxed in that. And if like, I've done everything I could to be here and I think I'm in a position to win, I think if I play my cards right, which I you know, I'd studied enough to know what moves I was going to make when. And it was just pretty much like allowing that process to happen and accepting the result. And it was a very calming feeling for me. And I knew that I wanted it really badly, but it was one of those acceptance of like, whatever I could do today, it was the best result I could ever ask for or I could ever get. And so it was nice. It was a nice kind of feeling on that start line. And I think I was just ready. I think at that point I was just ready to win. And it's been a long time in the sport without a win, a major championship. So it was, a long time coming. So that was nice.
This is kind of like a weird question, but what, since you like put everything out there, you did all that you could, what place or like what time do you think would have been a disappointment in your eyes if you had finished and you've been like, wow, I literally did everything and I'm disappointed in myself?
Second.
Yeah. Okay.
So there was probably six people in the world that thought I could win. And I was one of them. I would say a couple family members were in there, obviously Danny and my assistant coach as well, Julian. Well, that was about it. And when you're in a stadium of, 35,000-40,000 people, and all of them are like, oh, this is like a done deal. And everyone at home like, oh, this is like, as easy as written. And it's actually quite a fun feeling of being like, they don't know what I'm capable of here. And I wanted to keep my cards close to my chest in the first couple of rounds because I was like, I'm feeling really, really good, but I don't want to do anything silly to draw unnecessary attention to myself where I have to then answer questions about it. So I just like smoothly get through, don't need to win any of these and go from there. But yeah, I was ready to go and I was pretty fired up about it.
Did you get any questions in like the media tent after your rounds?
Yeah. I mean, the media stuff takes so long after rounds as well. Like we were in there for so long and, I get it. I understand it. And they're trying to create storylines, but as athletes, it's like super tiring to sit there and give them storylines. So yeah, it was all about like, what's different. You seem more relaxed. Like you're not as like, I don't know, outspoken this year. And it was just, and the reason for it was just like, I don't want any way of getting distracted or tired from doing any of this kind of the bullshit side of like the championships. It's like, I'm there to do a job. I don't care if the media is positive or negative about me. I don't have any connection to that. And it was just like, get in, get out and get the win really. So yeah, I was just giving them complete pish through the rounds. I don't know what I was saying. Just rubbish.
Well, yeah, I feel like a lot of people just do want to create storylines. Whatever is in their head, they want you to feed into it. So it's good that you have that mentality. I don't know. Also, you just have experience probably being in the media tent and just having public eyes on you. So it probably makes you better at it just to check out. But I feel like that would be hard. I don't know, especially the men's 1500 this year, I feel like was absurd. And just Jakob is just such a dominating presence. Like you said, most people in the stadium thought it was going to be a done deal or whatever. So I feel like there's just like a lot of, at least for me, I was in Budapest. I didn't watch your final. I think I watched your second round or something. And then we were like, me and my friends were in Malta and we were watching like the 1500 on our like little iPhones when we were at dinner or whatever. And it was just like, I feel like it was the most hyped up event of the entire weekend, at least for me. And I'm like, I'm a 1500 runner and I like watching the women's 1500 because I know people that are racing, whatever. But the men's 1500 was like the one to watch, I feel like, this weekend. So it was just cool to see, I don't know, you come out with the win and everything. When you finished, were you like in shock? Obviously you were in shock because you thought that you were, that you knew that you had a chance to win or whatever. But like, what were your thoughts crossing the finish line?
I'm like you were saying before, like I'm very meticulous of what I plan and what I do, but I planned everything except from one step past the finish line. Yeah. And so I don't know what I was doing. I was just like, so what was cool about it was that there was a ton of Brooks staff and like the people that created the spikes and like the marketing team and like coaching staff and stuff like that were maybe 25 meters past the finish line. And so like that's where I ran to, like that's who I was kind of screaming at, and my fiance was there as well. And then I went right and saw my parents and things like that. So it was like a really, really nice moment. But yeah, I had not planned that in any way, shape or form. But I had gone through it in my mind a bunch, like what it was going to feel like during that last 100, but I hadn't thought about what I was going to do afterwards. I did think as soon as I crossed the finish line, I was like, I want to make sure people know that I'm not that tired. So I'm going to keep running. I think that was the only thing I could think about. I was like, I'm just going to keep running because I didn't feel that bad. I was like, you know, we'd all ran really fast, but it wasn't like I was going to flop on the ground because the 1500, like you work hard, but it's really not that bad.
Yeah.
It's not like a 5K or a 10 or anything like that. So I was like, I'm just going to keep running and I'll come back and say well done to everyone after that and enjoy my moment. So that was probably all I was thinking about, really.
Yeah. I mean, that probably just has to be the best feeling in the entire world, even though it's, yeah, something that you don't plan. So you don't really know what's going to happen. I just feel like in the sport, there's not that many wins on the big stage. So when you have one, I feel like you really just have to relish in it, you know? But I was wondering, so I don't really follow like running drama, running like beef or anything, but people were asking if you have beef with Jakob.
I don't think beef's the right word. Like I wouldn't invite him to dinner. It was probably the best way I can say it, but you know, we get along and it's quite funny because for the medal ceremony, there was a bit of drama behind that because, you know, Jakob was just not, he was just like super late. Like we were like, this guy's not going to turn up because we did it 2 days later because they had the 5K, the first round of the 5K the next day. And so it got postponed. So I was a bit upset about that. I was like, I mean,
yeah, what?
Like any chance that I can just get this medal. And, you know, my parents had already left, to be fair. So it wasn't like they were going to be there anyway, but I would have been really frustrated if that had happened. So I didn't really care. I was like, do whatever. So, but Nordas and Ingebrigtsen, like, just do not get along. Obviously, Nordas is coached by Ingebrigtsen's dad, and they just don't get along. And so behind the scenes for the medal stuff, like, Ingebrigtsen, like, finally turns up. And I'm like, all right. And I'm like, who the fuck is he going to talk to? Like, he definitely doesn't like me, and he fucking hates him. So it was quite interesting. So he sat there on his own for a while, and then he came and spoke to me. And I was like, you know, he's picking between the two evils here, and seems to have come out on top. But, yeah, we're just shooting the shit. Like it wasn't much serious conversation. It was just like, you know, how was that 5K yesterday? Like, I just, you know what I mean? So it's not like we'll argue about anything. And we've actually had some really nice conversations in St. Moritz after Worlds and stuff of last year. And, you know, but nothing very serious or deep. I don't know. He's a competition to me, and he doesn't look like he's out there to make friends. And I have some really good friends in the 1500 circuit. I think everyone kind of gets along. But yeah, he's obviously here to try and dominate our distance, and I got in the way of that, and that's going to upset him, and that's okay. Yeah, there's always some sort of drama, and he's always looking to get attention on himself. So he'll create the drama if he's not winning.
Yeah, okay. I was trying to find, but apparently he said that he was sick or something. But I was trying to find what he said that, and I couldn't find it.
It's somewhere between, yeah, he said he was sick somewhere between losing to me and then winning the 5K. Which, you know, you never know. But I think he said he was sick for the semifinal or something like that, where he was like showboating in the last 100, which doesn't really shout being sick to me, but you know, it is what it is. But yeah, I think that's the bad sportsmanship side that he has, where, you know, everyone loves him. And, you know, I think he is great and he's really good for our sport and our distance and like bringing eyes to what we're doing, but he does not lose very graciously. It's always, you know, World Indoors when he got beaten by Lewandowski, he had COVID, and then Outdoors last year, he was the best runner there and he got beaten by a worse guy, and then this year he's got a sore throat, and then so it's a bit of a shame really. But yeah, I'm sure he'll find some sort of disease next year when I beat him at the Olympics.
Sort of disease.
Yeah, he'll have a list of diseases ready to talk about at the post-race interview, I'm sure.
Stop, that's hilarious. I feel like that's the most like classic excuse in the book. I'm like, can you not think of anything else? I'm like, just stop saying that you're sick. Everyone said, like, that's such like a high school.
You should probably figure that out, you know? If he keeps getting sick, you should probably figure that out.
Oh, that's funny. How do you feel about his world record?
Oh, and the fucking 1.25 mile. Yeah, you know, I'm looking for, yeah, listen, he's running very fast. I couldn't have ran that, I don't think, but would I have attempted it? I'm not sure I would be able to convince the meet directors to run a 1450 meter race to try and see if I could run the world record in that. But you know, I think no, he's having a bit of fun, and he's running some pretty fast times, I'll give him that, but he didn't win world, so that's on him.
I love running. It's not even running beef. Like, compared to other sports, it literally has nothing on. Like,
I know.
I don't know. But it's just, like, so funny. Obviously, like, everyone eats it up because there's just not that much drama in our sport in general. So I just, like, I love when there's, like, a little bit of tea, you know? Do you have any other, like, main competitors in the sport, or, like, people that you just, I don't know, really just want to beat all the time?
I don't dislike really anyone on the circuit. I think it's always good to beat the kind of higher ranked guy. Like, you know, I think right now I'm like ranked third in the world. And so Ingebrigtsen and Yard are ahead of me, and I got dipped by Yard last week. And so I would be good to try and start beating him again. And then me and Ollie have always had a good rivalry since college, because he beat me in my last NCAA race. And so that's always like a fun one to work with. And I think, you know, they've got, you know, he's got a good presence in the sport. I think a lot of people like him. And, you know, similar to me, where, you know, I think we have a similar fan base. And so it's like a really fun head-to-head whenever we race. And then in the UK, obviously, we have some fantastic 1500-meter guys. We have, you know, obviously me and Jake Whiteman, two world champions over the last 2 years. And I enjoy racing them because I grew up racing them. And so I've been racing them for a very long time. But yeah, I just enjoy racing against high-level competition. I'm not really scared of racing. I'm not really scared of losing. And you can kind of see that through the year. Like, I don't really care about winning Diamond Leagues in races throughout the year, as long as I win the right one. You know, I got ninth in Oslo, I got third in Lausanne, and I was fifth at British Champs, and then I won Worlds. And yeah, I've only ran like 5 or 6 1500s this year, and most of them were at the World Championships. But I just enjoy peaking for the right day, and I think that's always the right way of doing it. It won't put me down in history as one of the best 1500-meter runners in the world, but I would like to think it would be, my goal is to be the best championship 1500-meter runner in the world.
Well, I feel like that's also what people remember, the ones that are winning the championship. So not the ones that are winning the league meets necessarily.
Yeah, the league meets. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably, yeah, it's a good way of saying it. I think, you know, long-term people remember the medals for sure.
Yeah.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
I want to talk about how you like came to the States to start running. Did you come just for college?
Yes. Yeah. So I came over in 2015 to the University of New Mexico.
Okay. Why New Mexico?
It was my only offer.
Nice.
Yeah.
So were you good in, like, I don't know, earlier years?
Yeah. Well, so my issue was I was getting recruited when I was 16. I left school at 17, and you know, I sent out a bunch of emails. I had this little running CV email that I sent to as many coaches as I could find emails for. And so I just was firing them off, and, you know, they kept coming back like, why don't you wait another year? Like, these are great times, but, like, you know, you're 16. So just, like, keep doing what you're doing. And I was like, I'm going to come next year. So if you don't want to take me, like, just say that and I can just move on. And so I just didn't really get any offers, and I was like, this is a bit of a shame, really. And I then finally got an email back from Joe Franklin from New Mexico, and I was like, he was just pretty much like, let's do a Zoom call, or back then it was Skype. So we did a Skype, and he was like, you win a lot of races. And there were like local Edinburgh races and Scotland races and stuff. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, that's a real skill. Like, I think we struggle with that here. Like, you know, but I do think it's a skill, and if you have it, like, we're excited about that. Let's stay in contact. I was like, okay. And then, like, I got another email like a couple days later being like, we're going to offer you a spot on the team. Do you want it? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And then I emailed him like an hour later being like, hey, does that mean I'm on a full ride? And he was like, yep. And I was like, oh, awesome. That's a guy. That sounds great. And so I was like an unofficial, like I'm coming handshake deal kind of thing. And I had ran 352 in the 1500 and 153. And then I think 4 weeks later, I won European Juniors, ran 3:44, so knocked, you know, 8 seconds off my PB, and won Euro Juniors. And then he sent me an email like, "What the heck?" Like, as in, like, that this is so fantastic. I can't believe this has kind of paid off. But again, it was a handshake deal, and so I was getting lots of offers at that point, as I was doing my lap of honor at European Juniors, I was seeing all these different NCAA coaches like, oh, come to Oklahoma State, come to, you know, here, then, everywhere. And I was like, oh, no, I'm going to New Mexico. And yeah, so Joe phoned me like, are you still coming? I was like, yeah, you know, we already made this kind of deal. And yeah, then I flew out. I think it was like August 1st of 2015 with my parents, because I wasn't allowed to sign my own release forms because I was too young. And I arrived 2 weeks early because I read the email wrong. And yeah, we just kind of bounced around New Mexico for a bit. But I hadn't been to the U.S. really. So arriving in Albuquerque Sunport Airport was definitely a culture shock. And, you know,
that's like the most random state to fly into as well.
One of the least luxury airports that you can find. But, you know, they do need to update their chairs. I do feel like it just doesn't look good. The ambiance in there doesn't look great. But, you know, it's an efficient airport, gets you out on time, and that's all you're looking for. But, yeah, when I arrived in 2015, I was like, where am I? Like, this is insane. And I think my parents are looking at each other like, well, where have you brought us? Like, where? But I knew they had a good, like, I had done a bit of research into like the UK athletes there, and they seem to have like good, like Lee Emanuel's had you know, two NCAA championships in the mile there, which is funny, you know, because now he works for Brooks, which is really fun. But yeah, so I was like, okay, like the coach knows what he's doing. I've never run at altitude, but I'll figure it out. And yeah, I was just over there. I had a great time.
That's just like, I feel like that's such a risk to just like say that you're going to go to a school. And obviously, yeah, because New Mexico is really good. But just in general, in terms of like the environment, like the atmosphere, like the vibes of the team, the terrain, the altitude, like without visiting, that's just kind
of crazy. I made crazy mistakes, yeah. But I went with my gut and I was like, this feels like the right move. Because there was a couple of like universities that I was emailing with that was going to try and offer me like partial stuff that I was like, this doesn't feel right. So when New Mexico came through, I was like, yeah, definitely, I'm going to do that. But I had no idea like rosters were a thing. So I knew no one on the team. So when I arrived at practice, I kind of forgot that the team was part of that, like that everyone just started showing up. And I was like, damn, this is crazy. And there were so many people and I didn't understand the whole, I thought everyone was on a full ride. Like I didn't understand the cut, like, cause there's a bunch of walk-ons and people were studying in their cars beforehand. And I pretty much forgot I had to go to class. So like looking back, I really didn't think things through, but I had an absolute blast.
Did you always know you wanted to come like run in the NCAA?
Yeah. So I trained in the same group that was getting, so Chris O'Hare was in the group who, you know, won NCAA indoors a couple of times, had the NCAA indoor record of the mile. And he used to come home at Christmas time and things and tell us all the stories about how fun it was. And like, you got paid to go to university. And I was like, wow, that seems amazing. So that was always a big plan of mine. I was like, if I can follow in his, because he then went professional with Adidas. And I was like, if I follow in those footsteps, then you know, maybe I'll be able to sign a deal and run and do this as a job. So I wasn't really getting the grades that I needed to get into universities in Scotland. And if I went to England, I would have had to pay for university. So it was, I then was like, okay, I'll just sit my SAT. And so I had to sit my SAT the same time as I was sitting my final exams in the UK, which is, yeah, I think it was the worst of both worlds, having to study for two different exams. And I don't think either of them went incredibly well. I didn't leave with a ton of qualifications, but I was okay at running. So that got me far enough.
It's crazy how running fast can get you into a lot of schools. So
it sure can. It got me into a whole grand total of one as well. So that's all I needed. You only need one school. You got to remember that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's all I needed. And yeah, I think, you know, it would have been cool to stay in the UK, but it just never really, the opportunities that I had been presented with, it wasn't something that excited me. And going over and starting a new challenge was always very exciting for me. So yeah, that was always the idea.
How was like the transition from running in the UK to the States? Like, are people weird here? Like, how's the running?
Yeah, well, I'm also like, I'm kind of a go with the flow guy as well. And so, you know, first day of practice, I was late. And so I got in trouble. But the second day of practice, I was told, listen, you're going to run to practice with these guys. And I was like, okay, so that means that you're not going to be late. I was like, pretty magic. turned up with them, ran with them, and I ran like 10 miles. And I would normally run like 30 miles a week in high school, so 30, 35 miles a week. And so I ran there, and then I ran with these guys just following because I was going to get lost regardless. And so I had to just follow them. And we ended up running like 10, 11 miles. And the coach was like, "How far did you go?" And I was like, "I have no idea. I wasn't wearing a watch or anything." And he was like, "You've been running for like 70 minutes. I was like, "Damn." He said, "What do you normally run a week?" I was like, 30, 35. And so he's like, "Okay, you need to take tomorrow off." So the transition was not smooth. It's just a transition for everyone in university. It's just like getting used to not living in the same place, like not living at home. And the whole living in a different country was a little bit weird, but I don't think it was as difficult as just like not having the day-to-day guidance and having to make decisions on your own. Like I was making every wrong decisions nutritionally, sleep wise, like everyone does. And then having to go to class, I really did forget I had to go to class. And that was like a really tough thing to remember. But I then ended up enjoying it, you know, because that's the thing is like, I was so focused on running. And then they were like, "Oh, you know, you have to stay eligible and you have to have this GPA and all this stuff." And I didn't know what GPA was. And so in the UK, our final exam is 100% of our grade. And so, you know, we'll go through a whole year of school and our exam is like the final grade that we get for that whole year. And so
a lot of pressure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the UK were built for big moments, you see. And so I'm going to class and, you know, I miss a couple of homework assignments and we had a little pop quiz or whatever it was. And I failed that with 18% or something stupid. And I got called into the, you know, advisor's office and he's like, "You know, you're not doing well, you're failing." And I was like, "Don't worry about it. I'll always bring it back together." And he's like, "No, like you are failing. Like, this all counts towards your final grade." And I was like, "Well, no one told me this. Like, I thought it was going to be a situation where I'll learn it near the end and then I'll pass the exam." But yeah, the US is slightly different. So yeah, for us international students, it does take a bit of transition time, but we get there in the end.
Did you get your degree? Because didn't you leave early?
I signed in my junior year, and around that time, I started dating my now fiance, then girlfriend, who is finished med school, is now in her residency now, and so very high achiever, and was very unimpressed with my studies, and so I was like, "Okay, to impress this girl, I'm gonna have to really knuckle down." So I ended up with an undergraduate degree in communications and a master's in business. So it ended up five, six years it took me to get all of it, but I did make the transition into knowing that I should probably not be a bum in class, and it's not very attractive when someone doesn't try in the education side of things, and tried to round out my CV a little bit more in university so that I could impress some chicas.
Nice. That was a big idea. And it seems to have worked, so that's good for you.
It has thus far, so yeah. Doing well.
And you went above and beyond by getting your master's, so that's great.
I almost got a little bit addicted to it, to be honest. I was like, "Well, this is kind of fun." And I did a minor in business. And so I was like, "Oh, this is something that I can see myself doing." Because the communication thing was like, I was just like, "Hey guys," like in the first year, I was like, "What's the easiest degree to get? Like, just give me that one." And they were like, "Yeah, communications is pretty simple." I was like, "Okay, put me in that." And then it was like, you know, what can we do to actually make this look pretty good? And so I ended up doing like, it's called like a 3-2 program. So you do 3 years undergrad, 2 years master's, and some of the classes from undergrad add to the master's stuff. And it ended up being good. And that helped with, you know, Brooks were pretty cool about me continuing my studies after I signed with them. And that was a really nice way for me to sign while I was still in university. And that was kind of an agreed upon plan.
So you signed with Brooks, and then were you still in New Mexico, or were you then in Seattle just doing like online stuff?
No, I was still in class. This is before the COVID stuff where you're allowed to do it. Cause I was on an F1 visa, which is a student visa, which means you have to be in class for a certain amount of hours. So it wasn't really part of the conversation for me to go online. Cause it was like, either you can be a professional athlete and then you have to do partial, hours in the university, or you can stay a full-time student, stay on your visa and still be able to, you know, you have to be in class. So I stayed in New Mexico, and me and Danny kind of just created this relationship long distance, really. It was like, as funny as it sounds, it's very similar to like any relationship. We were calling each other all the time, and I was telling him all about my feelings, and we just built this awesome coach-athlete relationship that just meant that he knew me so well as a person. And then he even now, like, you know, I have to travel quite a lot to Europe and go to all these races. And obviously I'm part of the Brooks Beast, but sometimes I'm in Diamond Leagues, and because I am British, I have to do a bit of a European season as well. And he knows me so well now that, you know, it's very easy for him to coach me from afar sometimes when I'm not in Seattle and not around the team. So yeah, it actually worked out super well. And long term, it was great, but short term, we had to figure out some problems. But it was pretty smooth, I think.
So when you go and you travel like by yourself and stuff, are you training by yourself too, or do you just, I don't know, run with other people, work out with other people?
So, you know, I'm with the team, I would say 90% of the year, but it's that 10% of like when I'm in Europe, I have to go for British champs, or if I have to go for a Diamond League and not everyone on the team is going to Diamond League. Like, I normally get sent with our assistant coach, Julian, and so he trains as well. He's ran like 2:16 in the marathon. So he's very good to train with on the strength stuff. And, you know, he hangs on for dear life on the speed stuff. So yeah, that's pretty much who I train with. Like I love running with athletes, but I don't love doing sessions with them because someone has to make some sacrifices somewhere if it's either me or the other athlete. So I just kind of train the sessions on my own. But for easy runs, I'll run with kind of whoever's in town.
Nice. Do you ever see yourself like moving up to like road racing? Like maybe not the marathon, but beyond? Like obviously, I don't know. I feel like men can do track racing for longer than women. I don't know why. I just feel like there's just like people that are literally 35 plus still running track races. I'm like, how is that even possible? But do you want to have like a super long career where it's like once you're done with track, then you go to road and everything? Or what's your vibe right now?
So, you know, I ran a half marathon last year just to test it out because I thought, you know, I run pretty much train like a 10K guy most of the year. And so I was like, I think I could really crack something longer. And I kind of wanted to show to Brooks that I have a future on the roads. And so we ran a half in San Diego last year and it went very well. And it was just like probably one of the most fun races I've ever been in. And I've always wanted to kind of milk this career for what it was. And I was like, you know, I feel like I'm going to need to move up probably after LA in 2028. And so that transition of trying to race a couple longer races is kind of started to see if it's something within my bandwidth, really. And I think it is. I think some of the best marathon runners in the world started off as world-class 1500-meter runners. So it's definitely on the cards. It's a lot harder than it is to do than it is to talk about, but I think it'll be a fun transition, but hopefully we're a good couple of years away from that right now, but we shall see. I do think I would like to run a marathon at some point professionally to just give the respect of what that training is like. Cause I think, you know, that training kind of blows my mind a little bit. And I think the longest I've ever ran is like 18 miles. So it's definitely something that I'm interested in. So we'll see. And, you know, Brooks make a pretty good road shoe. So I enjoy thinking about doing something like that.
I'm kind of surprised that you train like a 10K runner. I don't know. Again, I don't really know like the different training philosophies of different groups or whatever. Does everyone on Brooks train like longer? Like, is it a strength program?
I think what Danny does really well is he'll take the athlete from whatever program they do at university and they'll implement that into the training setup that we do as a professional. So I trained pretty strength-wise in Albuquerque when I was at UNM. Mainly because you're at altitude, you're not going to be ripping lots of fast stuff anyway. And that's kind of what worked for me. And so when I made the transition over to Danny and training more at sea level, it was, let's just kind of stick with what's really working and let's make some tweaks here and there to make sure that you're not a 9-to-5 athlete. You're a 24/7 athlete that's, you know, getting paid for what he does. So that was the transition, really, is stick to what works and we'll tweak it in the way that, you know, the way that he coaches. And so everyone's a little bit different. Like Henry is slightly less strength based, but you know, for the most part, yeah, I would say 1500-meter running is just a strength based event right now. Most of them can run very good 5Ks. And if they moved up and ran a 10K, they'd run a very good 10K. But I do think as a 1500 distance, you have to have a balance. Like I don't train like a 1500 guy more than maybe 3 or 4 weeks a year. So I'll train like pretty much like a half marathon guy until December, and then I'll drop down to maybe like a 5K guy indoors, and then I'll drop all the way down to an 800 guy come outdoors, and then I'll train like a 15 guy probably in that build up towards Worlds or Olympics. And so that's normally how it works. And I think it's good long term, helps with rounds, and it helps with the final to have a bit of speed near the end. So it's 1500 is a weird distance, so it's a bit of a pick and mix really.
Have you gotten injured at all over the years, or have you had any like low points?
Yeah, I've gathered some injuries over the years, and it's just we're very aware of what makes my body tick a little bit. So you know, I know that my knees are never great, and my calf on my left side is not great. Just overall, left side of the body is just it's a bit of a weakling, really. My right side's a warrior. There's never anything wrong with the right side of my body. It's just my left side. So it's just turning left is always a bit tougher on the left side, but we know what's going to come up through the year. Like my knees are going to be bad through the fall, and my calf's going to be pretty fragile through the spring. And so we're just on top of it. And you know, I've been running for a very long time, and I know kind of how much treatment I need and stuff like that. So I haven't had anything major really. Had a bit of a calf problem this year, but you know, we were already on top of it because it happened the last couple of years, and then I was able to get through the fall without any problems. And I think that's the big thing that people forget is, you know, being consistent for multiple years is the reason that you're able to run so fast. It's not really, you know, it's not the spikes and the track is the reason we're running fast. It's like, you know, people are smarter with the way that they train. And if they're staying away from injuries and being consistent, they're going to continue to run at the high levels that we're doing. So I'm very lucky to not have any majors thus far. But it's we're always just kind of making sure that we're staying away from anything too dangerous, really.
That's also the benefit of staying on a team for so long, like 5 years. I mean, it's like, I guess not that long, but still, people make coaching changes all the time. So to be able to stay for 5+ years, the coaches know the body really well. They know what's going to work for you training wise and everything. So that definitely helps you with staying consistent and stuff. So.
Yeah, just having the same, like, so the athletic trainer that we have, part of the team, was actually my athletic trainer at UNM as well. So I've actually worked with her for like 8 years.
Jeez.
There was actually a transition year where she was on the team before I was. But yeah, so about 7-8 years that I've been working with her. And so she knows me really well. I know her very well. And so it's kind of a marriage of everyone kind of understanding what's going to come up and knowing how to really have a plan to make sure it doesn't really ruin training. That, you know, obviously there's freak accidents that happen and I have to be aware of that, but I just like to stay as risk-free as possible.
Do you like living in Seattle?
Yeah, I think, you know, we don't get the best of Seattle. You know, I'm mostly there in the winter.
So you get the worst of it.
yeah, but you know, I think, I mean, it's such a, like, there's so much going on in that city, and it reminds me a lot of London. Just from a business point of view, like there's always stuff going on. It's like so lively, and you know, it's a very, very different city than being in New Mexico or being in Albuquerque. So it's there's always a change up somewhere. And when you're tired of the city, by the time that we're tired of that, then I get to go to Albuquerque and have a bit more space and, you know, see the mountains and all that stuff. But yeah, Seattle's a fantastic place, and we get to be around the HQ and be around the employees and you know, work with all the people that are working on our product and PR and marketing and everything. So it's a really fun business to be around, and yeah, we get free lunch there too, so we're just always in that building.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I've heard people that I don't know, other Brooks Beasts or Brooks affiliated people I've talked to just really love like the HQ and everything that they have to offer there. So, and Seattle is just a cool city in general, so it's not a bad place to be, other than like the like winters are bad and the rain, but other than that, like, I don't know, once you get used to it, it's not that bad.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I grew up around that kind of weather. I think it's very similar weather to the UK. So you know, I'm very used to it. But yeah, like you say, the HQ is awesome to be around, and there's always something going on. And I think they're in the process of kind of expanding and building new and improved buildings. So it's a very exciting time to be part of Brooks, and especially be part of the Brooks piece as well.
What do you do outside of running? Like, do you have hobbies?
The hobbies that I like I'm not allowed to do during the season, which is frustrating because, you know, I guess, yeah, it kind of sucks. But so I like to golf a good bit. Like, to be honest, I'm pretty boring. Like, I like to golf. I like to hang out with my buddies. Obviously, I like to spend time with my missus who's currently living in Florida. So as much time that I can spend with her is amazing. But yeah, my body doesn't love going sideways. So golf during the season has been banned for me.
It's so sad because it's like, it's not really that rigorous of a
no, it's not
hobby.
It's really not. I'm not allowed to even bowl because I like pretty much put my hip out when I did it once, and I was like, I should probably stop doing that. I'm quite an intense individual when it comes to sport. I'm not gonna half-ass it. I'm just gonna, you know. But you know, now I'm in my off season and I can get a bit more stretching in. I'm not as dehydrated all the time from my running and tired from my running. So I'm gonna play as much golf as I can, and I don't know. I really don't do a lot of stuff outside of running other than just hanging out with, you know, with the team and with family and friends and stuff. So yeah, I have to be a very careful individual, apparently.
Yeah.
not ruin myself from doing anything but running, apparently.
I feel like that's just the sacrifice you have to make as a professional runner. But obviously it's paid off for you. So
yeah, it's really boring though. I will give you that.
It's boring, but I feel like it is fulfilling, you know, pushing your body to the limit like every day.
Yeah. And having moments, obviously, like the World Championships are like the reason we do it, of course. And, you know, I'm very like happy and know that how difficult it was to get to that position and hold on to that feeling for, you know, watching all my friends play golf through the season. I'm like, okay, well, I'm chasing a really good feeling. And, you know, as part of the journey, I guess that's the sacrifices it takes, is not playing 18 holes when you want it. It doesn't seem that bad, really, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, now, like, yeah, it's in your off season. Are you like sad that you're just kind of letting the fitness go?
No, I'm really not. Like, I do have a tough time transitioning out of just the mindset of like, just we're just grinding. And obviously with the diet stuff as well, like, it's very weird to eat anything outside of what I was normally getting cooked.
You don't have your chef anymore?
No, I'm in conversations to see if she will come on full time, but we'll see. And she was so fantastic. But yeah, it is a weird transition to go from like everything's so locked in to like we have to completely start again and let the mind just really rest and recover and just get excited for another year. Because that was the big thing as well, as like mentally, it was just so draining. And you just got to try and fill that cup up as much as you can when you can. And so I'm excited for that part, but I don't care about losing fitness. I quite enjoy that rebuild. As long as I can stay away from injuries, it's just like part of the process. But I do understand why people would be frustrated with that.
Yeah. But I mean, after having such a good year, like you said, it's just kind of emotionally draining, even though it was like good. I feel like it's still just a lot of highs and it's just a lot. So, really, and I feel like the fun part of running is just getting fit. It's like hard, but it's very rewarding to do like the process of actually training and everything. So
yeah, there's nothing like comparing yourself to yourself from a previous year. And it's like, you know, I just want to, you know, I've already written out some stuff of like where I feel like I could be better this year. Like, I think there has to be a respect for what went very well and where I made the right sacrifices at the right times. And you know, the 1% that I gained throughout the year, but there's also things that I'm like, okay, I could have been better here and here and here. And maybe we can, you know, find half a second here. Just trying to find where things might have not gone perfectly. Cause I do think I can run a lot faster as well. And that's just a fun challenge with things, is like, where can you push it far enough where you're not pushing it too far when it comes to training and racing? And so that's kind of the next fun part of the journey, which is targets on my back now. And now I've just got to try and hold on for as many years as I can, really.
So where do you think that you can work on? Are you allowed to share and divulge the secrets?
That's fair. I'll share. I'm a pretty open book about things. You know, I think in the fall, I did a good job staying away from injuries. Like, I definitely mostly have knee problems in the fall. Just it gets a bit colder and I get lazy with my glute exercises. And so staying on top of that, I don't think I think I could be better with the amount of treatment I get. I probably only get treatment every couple of weeks. Our PT's there, or sorry, our AT's there every day. And I just kind of chat to her. And I don't really ever get
every
treatment.
Every couple of weeks? What is that even really doing?
I don't know. And I just go, and she's like, what's wrong? And I was like, nothing. I just kind of came here because I felt guilty of not coming to do any work. I've never really been a big treatment guy. And so I think that's something that I'll be working on a bit more, is like allowing myself to just commit more time to the treatment side of things, and so that I can, yeah, just stay as resilient as possible. And I do think there's luck that comes along with staying away from injuries, but you can put more effort in to do that. And I think I will be putting more effort into that this year, because if I can go through the whole year without any missing any days through injury or illness, I'll win the Olympics. I know that. And so at that point, it seems pretty silly to not be on top of those things. So that's something that I think I could do better.
Yeah. It's just hard to, like, I don't know, think about that every single day. You know, when the bands are sitting there, like, you're waiting to do your glute exercises, like, it's hard to connect the dots between, like, doing these bands,
yeah,
the Olympics, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. It's like, get off your arse and stop watching TV and go down and get some treatment, or else you will not win the Olympics. I'm like telling myself off. Like my mom used to tell me off for not cleaning my room. And it's like, this is a lifelong dream of mine. And so it's not going to be, I'm not going to be lazy this year with those things. And yeah, just staying on top of it.
Do you have any other giant goals like that you want out of your running career?
Yes. Trying to think which ones I want to share. I don't really have a massive desire about the world record. It's not really something that's... Records excite me. They do. There's like the British record very much excites me. That's 3:28.8, and the world record is 3:26.00. So that's a big jump, and I have to give a lot of respect for that number. And I am unsure if I'm capable of that number. I think there's a very big difference between being one of the best time trialers in the world and being one of the best 1500-meter runner racers in the world. So that doesn't excite me. I want to have an Olympic and a world championship gold medal. So I've done 50% of that. And yeah, it'd be nice to get another Olympic medal before my career ends. But outside of that, like, I'm just like a championship guy. That's all I really kind of want to do. And you know, I want to sign with a brand and be with a brand that's exciting me. And you know, Brooks have been so good to me. And so I'm very proud to be part of that brand right now. And, you know, hopefully that long continues. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, I haven't really thought about it, to be honest, other than winning Olympic gold. I think, you know, after that, then I can maybe make some more decisions. But short term, I mean, the Olympics came around so quick too, so that's kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I know. I feel like all of it, like, these championships are happening so fast. Like, whether it was... Yeah. Was like Worlds was last year too, so it's like,
yeah,
Worlds then the Olympics. It's like, whoa, and
Worlds again.
Yeah, so hey, that's a lot of opportunity though to get
it is World it Championship is no. Olympic. I would have been frustrated with a year off at this point, because it's like, we're at the height of my career.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like you are the perfect person that's gonna benefit.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's, you know what it is, it's great after I take this time off, but like, knowing that there's Olympics in less than a year and just finishing this year and then about to start time off, I'm just like, you know, like, yeah, give me a break, you know. But I'm about to take my break, so it's perfect.
How long is your break?
So it works kind of weirdly. I don't ever take a break from running or the action of running. So I get about two really, really down weeks. And so the philosophy with it is that the body forgets how to run very quickly. And so the injuries come when, you know, you take an extended period of time off, if it's through injury and you're coming back to running, or if it's like you're just taking time off to take time off, and the body will just forget the action of running. And then when you start up again, you normally get injured. So I'll run for the next couple of weeks. I'll run like 20 minutes every couple of days. So I'll probably run like 9 or 10 miles a week for a couple of weeks, and then start transition into like 25, 30 miles and then build it back up, and then I'll go from there. But so 2 weeks of just not really thinking about running, no sessions, no lifts, none of that. But just keeping the action of running in my life. But I enjoy it. I mean, I'm not tired of the training. I'm definitely mentally and physically tired from the racing. So that's a nice thing. But yeah, we don't ever really get too much time away from the actual run.
Yeah. That makes sense. You're on my training plan now, the 20 minutes a couple times a week.
It's all right. I went a little jog today. I quite enjoyed it. I didn't warm down after Fifth Ave just because, why?
Yeah. Then I feel like that's, you have to just not cool down after your last race.
Exactly. I had drug testing, and then, you know, Ray, my agent, was like, you're going to jog? And I was like, nah.
No, absolutely
no,
not.
No, thank you, sir. I will be going back to my room, having a shower and having a lie down for a bit. So, yeah.
Sounds like a fulfilling end of the season. So
it was great. It was really nice. And like Fifth Ave do a really good job of like, they put on like the like event, like they put on like an open bar, kind of put the races on. We had to do a couple of speeches. And yeah, it's very different to any other race I've ever been to. I was able to do it last year as well. And I think, you know, I hope to continue to do it, because it's, you know, they put on such a fantastic event. So it's always good for the athletes.
I'm sure that you will keep getting invited back. So
I would like to think so. I hope so anyway.
Okay. Well, we have some listener questions to close out the episode, so we can go through them now. Someone asked, do you use a ruler when you shave your beard? Because the lines are so clean cut.
I'm not going to lie, that's actually a fantastic idea. I normally, so our assistant coach cuts my hair. So I normally get that done on race day, and he'll shave me. Yeah, that sounds weird, doesn't it? He wasn't at Fifth Ave. And so I was shaving myself, and I was trying to trim down my mustache, and I like pretty much slipped on it. And like this side is like a way higher than this side. And so I was really hoping people didn't quite know it. So I put my glam shades on to try and distract them from my mustache failures. But yeah, the ruler might be the move now.
Oh, that's actually my next question, is what happened to your mustache at Fifth? I'm just kidding.
I was going to be like, seriously, people
noticed? No, I don't think anyone noticed. Yeah, that is cool. Crazy. It's cool how you have an Oakley sponsorship, though. I feel like, do other runners have that? I've never seen that before.
So Fred Curley, I'm going to try and go through the ones that I know. Ollie Hoare has one, which he signed after me. I would like to say that, you know, they saw the successes they could have in the 1500 and they thought they'd double down.
Yeah.
But no, there's a lot of sprinters, 400 meter runners. And so anyone who's wearing the sunglasses, you know that they're probably getting sponsored by them. But I think you're seeing a lot at lots of different levels now that more and more people are wearing them, because they are so good to wear during races. And I think they're so fun to wear in the call room, and they're so fun to just like, it's just something different that you know, for some reason, commentators just like only want to talk about my sunglasses when they see me run, and nothing to do with me and any other, you know, dashing features that are you know, like my perfectly lined up beard. They're just like, oh, the guy in the glasses. But yeah, I mean, I think you're seeing it a lot more now. And I just, you know, I've had a blast working with them. I've been working with them for the past year, and hopefully that's going to continue. And yeah, I'm sure we'll, our relationship has been going very well thus far.
Yeah, well, when you're winning world championships, I'm pretty sure they're happy with you. So.
Definitely helps.
Yeah. Have you gotten like other sponsorship opportunities just from winning and stuff?
Yeah, so yeah, we're kind of in the process now of like dealing with that and trying to figure out which ones make sense, because I'm not really like one to just work with a company because of money. It's like I have to kind of believe in the product and enjoy that. And also like time is going to be very important this year. And so knowing what the brand wants from you and what, you know, you can offer is also very important to kind of establish early on. And so yeah, that we're kind of just weeding through that a little bit right now.
As an athlete, do you like the social media aspect of it, or do you not like it? most people don't, which I get. It's so much work. And like, you're a chef. Like, I feel like it's just sad because a lot of people can't afford it in the running world. Like a lot of the professional runners can't afford to hire on like a full PR company. And agents aren't doing that necessarily. They're negotiating shoe deals. So I get it that it's not like the top of the priority list.
Yeah, no, it's difficult. And I think, you know, I'm going to have help on that very soon. And, you know, I think that's kind of another higher transition stuff that I'll be doing, because I think it is really important. I really enjoy allowing everyone to see kind of behind the scenes, but I'm just not creative enough to figure out how the best way of doing that is and what people really want to see. And I'm not focused on it, so it's not something that I take time to do, but I do think it's really beneficial. So I'm in the process of trying to figure out how I'm going to have that run. But it is something that I like, but it's something I don't feel like I'm very good at. It's a skill. It definitely is a skill. And I think it's, if you have someone doing it for you, they have to understand your voice. But I think it's mostly just like, I'm great. I enjoy doing the captions and stuff, but it's just like knowing what content to put out there and capturing that content is sometimes the difficult one for me.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's why other sports, they don't even run their social medias. So
yeah, exactly.
That's
exactly.
For that exact reason. You shouldn't have to be creative if you don't want to. That's someone else's job. Have you ever run a beer mile before? And if so, what was your time? Or what do you think that you could run in a beer mile?
So I have run a beer mile. I ran it in my freshman year of college. I don't know if I completed it exactly how it should have been completed. But I ran something horrible, like in the 6:15 or something like that. What do you think I could run is a great question. I generally don't think it's much about your mile fitness. I think it's more about your beer intake and how fast. I mean, I can drink really quickly, but probably like for one beer. But I can't. I don't think I'd be able to chug while I'm really tired and breathing hard. So I do think I could probably run under 5. But I don't think that's very impressive, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it is impressive to the general population, but maybe
for a world champion,
it's like, well.
Yeah. If you can run 3:47 in the mile, it's not very impressive to then take another 1:15 to drink beers, I don't think. But maybe it is. I don't know. I don't watch enough beer miles to figure it out. But, you know, because I think I did see the world record got broken.
Yeah,
or something along those lines. And so it looks quick, though. I mean,
it is. It's stuff. Because, well, the guy that has the world record is like, I don't know, he's like a professional runner for Adidas in Canada, I think. Well, it's Corey Bellamore. And so he was like, runs for Adidas. And so he was like, he's like actually like a good runner. Mm-hmm. But his beer chugging is absurd. So like that's what makes all the difference. It's like you can be a very decent, you know, professional runner, but you gotta have the chugging abilities that'll put you over the edge. So
yeah, I would just have to figure out how to do 4 in a row within however many minutes it is, 4.5 minutes or whatever. And so yeah, I don't think that's in my skill set, but you know, maybe later on in the career when things are slowing down a little bit, we might move towards it, but we'll see. See where the money is.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Big time sport by the time we get there, so we'll see.
Yeah. Okay, one of the last questions I have is, what sport would you do if track wasn't an option?
I always wanted to be a professional rugby player. That's what my brother does. And so I was never skillful enough or big enough, and I kept getting injured, and I got dropped down into the second team at school. And that was kind of the last straw for me. I was like, I should probably just run full time now and not just do rugby as well. But that's a really fun sport that I would like to be part of a team sport, I think. Just something different, or maybe, you know, now thinking about it, I'm staring at my golf clubs. I would really want to be a golfer. Let's be honest.
That's like the opposite of a team sport.
I know. What am I thinking? Maybe I thought the team sport would be fun, but nah. I think I would have trust issues for people. I'd be like, right, guys, we need to get this right today. You know, everyone needs to go to bed at this time. And but with golf or tennis or something like that, might just be attention would just be on me. No, I'm a bit of a diva when it comes to that and in our sport. So yeah, golf or tennis, actually, now thinking about it. I don't know. These are good questions. They've got me pondering.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with golf. I'm going to say that.
I don't understand the fascination with golf. I really don't. It's like something I've never really understood. Especially for the men. It's like such like a male like hobby. Yeah. Like, I'm going golfing with my boys. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
I'm not very good. I will say that. I wouldn't say I'm a good player, but I enjoy being in a sport that feels really high pressure, but it's only pressure you're putting on yourself, like very big moment stuff. And it's not tiring. And so it's always nice. So it's a nice, like kind of off season sport to do. And I guess you can casually like be, it's very social as well. So I think men aren't very good at sitting around just chatting. And so we always need to be distracted by something just so that we can really talk about our feelings.
I feel like that is very true. Cause like I'll sit down with my girls, you know,
yeah,
with a margarita and some chips at a table. I'll sit there for 4 hours and just chat. But then I think about like going and playing golf. I'm like, let's get rid of the actual golf thing and let's just sit in the golf carts and chat. How about
that makes sense. Cause I mean, for me, when I was in university, I went to university. My brother was still in the UK and we were the worst ever at the like FaceTiming and sitting there chatting to each other. And so I got an Xbox and he got an Xbox. And so we would sit playing games and then chat. And it was the only time we would ever, instead of being like, hey, do you want to FaceTime? We'd be like, hey, do you want to play Xbox? And then we would like finally catch up. So yeah, we always just need to be distracted by something to get caught up on stuff. Maybe that's something of what it is.
Very interesting. Yeah. Wired differently, I guess.
Yeah, slightly.
Okay, well, those are all the questions that I had. So I feel like this episode was very well-rounded, learned a lot about you. I've never met you before, so it was nice to really get the full Josh Kerr experience. So,
I mean, you had a fantastic introduction to me over Instagram where you introduced with your name on Instagram and said, you know, hi, I'm Emma, you know, this is what I do.
Some people don't know. Like, I don't know if you know who I am. I'm not going to just assume.
It came from your Instagram account and you said your name and I was like, I know. It was very polite. I thought it was very nice of you. I thought it was very polite. So,
well,
I think you'll keep getting amazing guests if you keep doing that, you know?
I hope so. Some people don't reply to me. I'm like, thanks guys. Come on. I just want to have a conversation.
Call them out. Who was it? Call them out.
No, I'm not. I can't. See, I'm the opposite of like a person that will. I wanted to hear the tea, but I do not want to be involved,
right,
or be on anyone's bad side ever.
That makes sense. That's okay.
Yeah, and I like don't really have any ill will towards anyone, even if they don't reply. I'm like, I get it. I'm just like a random person that's messaging you, saying to take your time to come on my podcast. You know?
Yeah. But you know, they'll listen to it, hear it's a good time, and then they'll come on. I think.
Yeah. That's what I hope. Well, where can people follow you if they don't follow you already?
Yeah, I mean, Instagram, I have, you know, Josh H. Kerr is currently my Instagram name, which I just put two H's when I was like 17, 18 years old, and that's what stuck with it. So, yeah, I'm more lively on that than anything else. You know, I have Twitter, but I don't ever tweet anything. So Instagram is where you can find me mostly. And yeah, hopefully I can, over the next couple of months, be creating better content for you.
It's so funny. I think about 75% of people come on this podcast and then they say their Instagram, they say that's what I'm most active on, then they say that they have a Twitter but they never use it or they never tweet. So you followed the script perfectly. It was great.
You know, the thing is with Twitter, I think it's, I've always found it as like people, like they have a thought and they think to themselves that like people need to hear this thought that aren't with me right now, you know? Yeah. And I never like feel like that. I'm like, you know, if I think of something funny or something happens to me, I'm never like, the world needs to know this.
Yeah.
And that's what Twitter is. And I think it's good for like race results. And that's kind of why I have them. But other than that, it's kind of just people. I think Kyle Mauber is actually very good at it. I think his thoughts are pretty funny. But other than that, I don't really read much into it.
I remember I was at a bar in Des Moines after USA's. This was like a long time. This might have been like 2019, I think. And I went up to Kyle Mauber and Pat Casey. They were standing there in the bar and I said, you guys are my favorite people on Twitter. And then they're like, they were like so offended by that comment that the reason I knew them was because of Twitter. They were so offended by it. I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't really.
Were they still running at the time? Wait, when was this?
No, this is 2019. I was there.
Okay.
I was like shooting like a YouTube series with Nikki Hiltz. So nice. Yeah, I was watching them run and stuff. But then yeah, I went to the bar after and they were just really offended. But I was like, sorry, you guys are amazing at Twitter. Like, I don't have that Twitter banter that they have or like the Twitter mind. But I mean, I think it's a skill.
It is a skill. Maybe I'll hire someone to tweet things for me as well. You never know. If you see me lively on Twitter, just know it's not coming from me.
Love that. Okay, Josh, well, thanks for taking the time on your third podcast of the day to come on and chat with us to close out the episode. Can we get a good old peace out, fellas?
Yes, ma'am. Peace out, fellas.
Thank you all so much for listening to today's episode of Convos Over Cold Brew. I hope you enjoyed it. This episode was so fun. I've literally never met Josh in my life, so it was cool to, you know, really get the lowdown on who he is. And he's pretty funny, too, and I love just the nice, funny episode. So I hope you guys enjoyed it too. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Convos Over Cold Brew Pod to be up to date on the latest episodes and submit listener questions. Rate and review on Apple Podcasts if you love the podcast. It really helps me out and I just love reading your guys' reviews, honestly. It makes my day. Thank you all so much for listening and I will catch you all next week. Peace out, fellas.